July 11th, 2018, meeting of the Clark County Historic Preservation Commission. We will begin, as we always do, with roll call and introductions with the gentleman on my right.
Rock Manley, Historic Preservation Commissioner.
Robert Hines, HPC.
Sarah Fox.
Alex Gall.
Jenna Kay with the county.
Sharon Lamont-Tobin, Clark County.
Jen Bader, City of Vancouver.
Art Person, City of Vancouver.
Welcome, everybody. Let's see, we will move on to the minutes from the June 5th meeting. I'll give everybody an opportunity to look those over if you haven't had an opportunity to yet. Let's see. So, Rock, you were not present for that meeting.
I was not.
Okay, so we have three members present, so we can approve the minutes from the June 5th meeting.
I did have a comment, however.
You're
just
welcome.
Because I did read
them.
You did read the minutes.
On page 3, second paragraph from the last, it has Rob Heaney agreeing with himself that the Lightwood frame box.
Oh.
Yeah. So I'm not sure who the actors were for that.
I think Sean mentioned the life of the modulars, if I recall.
Small item.
Mm-hmm. Good catch.
I just wanted to prove that I actually read
approving the June 5th minutes?
Aye.
All right. Minutes are approved. Okay, tonight we have a public hearing. This is for the HPC Commission Rules and Procedures Bylaw Amendment to the Commission's bylaws to change the date and location of the regular Historic Preservation Commission meetings. All right. Do I have my cheat sheet for public hearings?
That's a great question. Are they recording it tonight? Oh.
We are, yeah.
So why do they still have these? Or is this for the recording?
That's what we're recording.
We're double recording it.
We're not recording in the...
We're not video.
Oh, we're not using the video.
Right.
Oh, okay.
All right, so as we get started, I'll ask the members of the commission if they have any ex parte contacts or conflicts of interest with respect to this hearing.
No.
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 No. No. Okay, we shall proceed and consider the public hearing open, and we'll begin with the staff report.
Okay, so the proposal is to amend the Clark County Historic Preservation Commission Rules and Procedures, page 6. Section A1, to change the regular meeting date from the second Tuesday of the month to the first Wednesday of the month, and to change the location of the meeting from the O.O. Howard House on Officers Row to the Clark County Public Services Center, 6th floor hearing room, 1300 Franklin Street. Staff recommends approval of this amendment to change the date and location.
So do you have any questions of the staff by the commission members? I don't have any questions. Doesn't sound like there's any questions. I know that we've covered this fairly extensively already. Okay. Is there any public comment with regard to this, since we don't have a presentation from an applicant here? Any concerns on the part of the public with the change? If not, we shall consider public comment closed and consider the public hearing closed. Commission, if there's any deliberation that needs to be had, let's have it now. Otherwise, I'll entertain a motion to approve.
Okay. If there's no comment, I would move that we approve the amendments to page 6 of the bylaws.
Second.
Are all in favor of approval of these of this change?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right. Change to the bylaws is approved. How's that for open chat, Jan? Yeah. Did you do okay?
Good.
All right. Great. Okay, moving on.
Moving right along.
Oh,
geez.
I don't think we can remove this fast before.
All right, new business, chair elections. So,
No, you skipped the
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry. Okay, we have another public hearing. Certificate of appropriateness for the Carnegie Library. This is Clark County Historical Museum and a proposal to replace the front stairs. All right. Once again, I will ask the commission members if they have any ex parte contacts or conflicts of interest with respect to this COA.
No.
No. No.
Nope.
All right. There are no conflicts of interest. Therefore, we will consider the public hearing opened and listen to the staff reports.
Great. Thank you, commissioners. We did discuss this a bit last month. The applicant provided a few options that we discussed. It's my recollection that we went away from putting metal stairs over the existing stairs and thought that a rebuild option would be probably the most efficient. There were two options that the applicant provided, and there was some debate on which one was the most appropriate. This is, as you mentioned, commissioners, this is on the National and the Clark County Heritage Register, so it's seeking a certificate of appropriateness from the commission. I have gone through and listed the Secretary of Interior standards and have made a recommendation recommended that the commission approve the rebuild, and we have the applicant here to dive in on some additional design details.
So let's be clear. Eric is the architect hired by the City of Vancouver. The city is actually the applicant.
Yes.
So you can blame her.
Okay. Thank you, Jason. Yes.
Hey, John.
Any questions of staff before we move on to presentation or questions of the applicants? Be the City of Vancouver?
No, I don't have any questions of staff.
Okay. Any questions for the applicant? Then if there's no questions for staff.
Is there a presentation or?
Yeah. Eric's going to.
Yeah.
Very good.
Okay, just to recap, so as Mark had mentioned, last time we came, we were showing three options. The first option was to leave the stairs as is. The stairs do not meet accessibility requirements. The stairs are 100 years old, they're deteriorating. Patches are failing very quickly now. And in addition, there's an unsafe condition of the top two stairs are directly at the threshold. Open the door, you walk out, there's a step. So we've been tasked by the City of Vancouver to come up with a design that meets accessibility codes and increase safety of the stairs. So as I mentioned, we came in with three options. The first option was leave the stairs as is, patch them as we can, and then overlay them with a temporary, with a removable steel structure, thus preserving the original aesthetic, introducing an intervention that could then be removed sometime in the future. The second option was a very similar approach of leaving the concrete stairs, patching them, and then overlaying them with a new concrete stair set within. And then the third option, which was the option endorsed by both the state preservation group as well as this one, was to replace the stairs in the engineering. We've done that in our designs. We're actually bringing in two variations of the replacement. They're very subtle variations, but I think they actually are very significant. As a backstory, we get into the two options. Making these stairs handicapped accessible requires that the stairs essentially be twice their length that they are today. And that's because of the landing requirement at the top, the landing requirement at the bottom, and the widths of the stair treads. They're currently 9 inches, and we have to go to 11 inches. So you can consider the top set of stairs, not the lower ones here that meet the sidewalk, but this group, to be twice the landing of what they are today. In addition, the top landing, right at the door, is technically, or is, at an elevation higher than the original plinths of the building. These are the original plinths, this is the stairs. We call these the plinths that have the light bulb on. One thing to notice, so the top landing is here, the plinths are here. One thing to notice is that this water table, the top of the plinths lines up with this water table. And as we began to detail these stairs, we realized that's a pretty key relationship of the stairs to building. So, in addition to getting longer, we have the challenge that whenever a stair or landing is 30 inches above an adjacent grade, there has to be a guardrail. The guardrail is going to be 42 inches tall. A 42-inch tall railing would have a significant aesthetic impact to the building. There were no railings originally in this building. And in fact, as we did more and more research into Carnegie's, there were no railings in the early Carnegie's at all. And it seems like most all of them were retrofitted. This one was retrofitted with a railing gap. So with that in mind, with the 30-inch rule, any time a stair or a landing is more than 30 inches above grade, you'd have to have a guardrail. We wanted to avoid the guardrail. It being 42 inches high would be quite noticeable. And so we have brought, in our proposal, we have brought the guardrail, the handrails, 36 inches away from the edges of the stairs. So if you look at, I know this is a lot of reads, I don't know if you're able to read, this is the full width of the stairs. So we've brought the guardrails in so they're 36 inches away from the edges of the stairs. Technically, by ADA accessibility requirements, we can do that. And we can avoid a guardrail. We think that's a pretty key piece of this. The city has already reviewed these and approved these drawings, so we know that the city is okay with them. We have a building permit in hand for this. The second component that we have really think through is when you get to the top of the stairs, the handrails can stop. So if you look at the drawings, the handrails stop at the top of the stairs. Right? Well, now you're at the landing, and there's a gap between the top of the stairs and the face of the building. There's a gap of about 3.5-4 feet, where we would again have to have some kind of a railing. Either an extension of the handrail to the face of the building or a guardrail. Attaching to the face of the building or coming that close to the pilasters, which to me are quite defining characteristics of that facade, to us seem like a bad idea. Try to leave as much of that original facade unfettered as possible. And so, in working with the city, they agreed to allowing us to leave that gap, but putting a small 4-inch high, 6-inch wide curb in line on the ground, on the landing, off the curb in line with the handrails, stopping 4 inches from the pilasters. Thus for caning. So the 4-inch requirement is an ADA requirement for designated caning strips. City agreed. So we're confident we are meeting code. We're meeting the spirit of the code and creating a safe place. Now, that said, are any questions about that?
What's the difference between a guardrail and a handrail?
Height. So handrail is between 34 and 38 inches above the ground, and a guardrail is 42 inches.
Okay.
And there's other sub. So that's kind of the technical ADA-ish stuff.
So the 4-inch curb, beyond the 4-inch curb, if you go out from the center, it's pretty much open. There's a plinth. And you get out to that edge, and you're still a little more than 30 inches
you
out
are.
There.
So
it's the curb that is doing the trick.
It's the thing that's telling you not to go over here.
Okay.
Now, a non-restrained 2-year-old is not going to care about the 4-inch curb.
Right.
But for those who are disabled, walker, difficulty walking, wheelchair, well, this could be the chair, most likely, visually impaired, the 4-inch curve will designate you. Albert?
Onward. Are you done with your presentation? Just pause there. Okay. Go for it, Eric.
So, I'd like to talk about option C1 first, which was what was actually presented, similar option that was presented the last time. The concept behind option C1 is, as I said, the plinths have to get longer. The relationship of the top of the plinth, the top of the current plinth, and the landing that the plinth brackets is 1 foot 1 inches. The plinth is 1 foot 1 inch higher than the current landing of the building. So concept C1 creates a relationship between the landing and the top of the plinth of 1 foot 1 inch, recalling the historical relationship of plinth and landing. But as I mentioned, there's this water table. It becomes quite a critical element when you really look closely at the details of the building. It's a critical element. So the proposal is we drop the last 3 feet at the back and line up with the water table. The length of that plinth is the same length as this. You can think of it conceptually, the old plinth is brought out, raised up, and then a new plinth is built. That creates a strange relationship between the walking surface of the landing and the plinth. Original. Because as I mentioned, the walking surface of the landing is higher than the original by approximately 3 inches. And so we have a three-dimensional model I'd like to show you to show how we accommodate that somewhat strange relationship between landing and lowering. You have to bear with me, this guy knows everything I know about. So as I mentioned, the height of this plinth is based on being approximately 13 inches higher than this landing, which is the original relationship of plinth to original landing. When we get to the backside, you can see the landing. It's hard to read because it's so subtle. There we go. You can see just the lip of the landing is higher than the plinth. We feel that would be a very odd relationship to just, because the plinth needs to be higher than the landing. So what we're proposing is that a 4-inch wide channel be placed along the where the landing and the plinth meet, so there'd be a gap of 4 inches, then a 4-inch gap that goes along the pilasters and all the way around to the threshold of the building. You can see this is that 4-inch high, 6-inch wide concrete curb that I talked about for the canyons. In my opinion, leaving a trench between the landing and the pilaster is critical. Because if we were to take that landing concrete landing, and pour it right up against the pilasters, the defining features, we would lose approximately 13 inches of the pilaster base, which are terracotta. And there's no brand on it, but it could be a Gladding McBean, which is the big terracotta manufacturer. You would lose the relationship of the dimension of the pilaster to the landing. We have a picture, PDF, the whole pilaster. Okay, we have a picture of it. This is some of the subtleties that I think are actually quite crucial to the building, the building's design. First of all, just as a I guess proof of what I've been saying a hundred times, the top of the old plinth lines up with the top of that water tank. So that's a snapshot, so you can see that that was a critical missing, by the way, by the Gothic course. But they meant. Now, to the pilasters. You can see here's the top landing right here. And if you think about it, we're pouring a new plane for the top landing at that height, at that threshold height. You would bury, so the threshold height is here, you're going to bury this much of the pilaster base if we just poured the concrete right up to it. And so what we're proposing to help make a transition between the landing and the lower new plinth, as well as being able to still appreciate the actual proportions of the pilaster, is to leave a 4-inch gap between landing and face of building. That way. Putting a scupper in. Around this thing. It's not hot, but I'll just kind of the concept on how it would be drained is the water would cool in that 4-inch gap. And then in the face of the wall right here, it's just not drawn in this model, but it is in the approved plan for the city, would be a scupper, an opening in the wall, discreet, that the water could go down.
Eric, do you have any concern about, like, turned ankles and things like that with the hole? And, you know, as an architect myself, just the... I totally get wanting to expose that terracotta because it's a pretty cool feature. But how do you do it and not create a maintenance issue with stuff that will blow in leaves and chewing gum wrappers and whatnot that's going to collect in that little trench and turned ankles and, you know, all there's a raft of kind of negative things that go along with it. As a designer, I see your challenge. Is there any putting a decorative trench cover? And I know then you wade into the issue of it's not historic now, and
well,
so
we're going to get into that with handrails in a bit. We thought about it, and we discussed that, and there's a couple of tricks to that. They're going to fill up with gunk anyway.
Yeah.
No one's going to pull them to clean. At least here it's an open trench, right? At least here the rain's going to do a lot of work for us. You can always pressure them. That's something. Number two, you'd have to attach it somehow to the face of the building.
Terracotta.
Doing something bad to the terracotta, unless you had a downlaying on it.
Right.
Now it's friction, but now you got to pull it up. They're never going to put it back in the same. It's like laying ceiling tile, right? It never goes back in exactly the same as this first install.
Yeah.
So to me, there is that huge, huge balance question. Do you subsume the old architecture and say, I used to look like this, take a bunch of pictures, and say, because we, by the way, have a ton of pictures. Put some kind of a half-inch or one-inch impregnated board, or up against those pilasters and say, okay, we haven't spoiled the pilasters, they're still there. If we ever want to remove the stairs in 140 years, they're still going to be there. Mm-hmm. Or right. You say, it doesn't matter, spoil it against them, that's what happens.
And, you know, I'm not familiar enough with the proportions and the design and so forth, and this is stepping further away from preservation and more into restoration or recreation, but raising the terracotta with...
And I think that would be out of the question only because...
Big enough, I probably won't need my glasses.
So I think if you look at how they set it up, it's about half the height, right? It's like double height.
So they're relating to the water table.
Exactly
water.
Right. Exactly right. That's exactly
and you'd be sitting on top of the water table.
I'm taking out that much. And you use that. They're not the greatest proportions, but they're darn good. Mm-hmm. Especially for region.
Yeah. Do they hit the mean? The golden mean.
Jan, did you say 4 inches? What's the spacing that we're leaving open? 4 inches?
I think that's what he said. 4 inches.
Yeah.
It's really not enough to put your foot in. You know, going to that turned ankle thing. 4 inches, you're not going to slip into it with your foot unless you're tiny, tiny foot. You know.
And does it, I don't know, you know, there's that relationship of the plinth to the water table, but stepping back, like from this vantage point, it still gives the impression that the plinths are offset from the water table.
Meaning, what have we accomplished by this generation?
Right. I mean, right. You know, you'd have to get right up on it to even realize that it's...
So you may as well... put the mineral board and pour the concrete against
it. I don't know if it's a safety issue or I don't know. But what's going on with option C2?
Because that then option C2 says okay. Option C2 says okay.
I can tell the difference.
The criticality of the relationship of the higher plinth to the landing, right? As I said, there's the original relationship about 13 inches difference between plinth and landing. And C1 says we're going to keep that relationship, and we're going to keep it the same length, so that it looks like the old plinth just raised up, right? With that relationship. C2 says that's not a critical notion anymore. What's more important is the relationship of the plinth to the water table. And so it essentially just grows the plinth. The height of the existing plinth simply grows forward about 4 foot. We have to do the same kind of 4-inch miracle work to make sure that landing at the top doesn't subsume the plinth. So in this particular case, and you've got
so in C2 right? the terracotta is pretty much covered up. That
well, it would be C1 and C2 would take the same approach at the landing.
Okay.
The terracotta.
But the plinth is lower. It's lower by 12 inches.
Right.
C2.
Right. But in C1, that 4-inch gap can stop because this plinth is higher. In C2, that gap has to continue. You don't have it modeled perfectly. You can blame it. What's going to happen in C2 is there's our gap, right? Our 4-inch gap. That 4-inch gap is going to have to continue down until about the third step, and that gap would be sloped. In order to have the clean relationship of the landing to the plane, so that we're not subsuming. We're not just simply rolling this over top of it. on the creek is simply because the depth of landing to bottom of pilaster base is a little over 11 inches. So that 11 inch needs to drain, and we have it coming down and draining out. That, I realize it's not drawn, does that make a little bit of sense? I'll add one other thing. As far as the relationship of the landing to the lower bed, whether that's in seawater or sea 2, we're really talking about a very minor delta in height between landing and top of the pilaster. One of the defining characteristics of the pilaster is that they have inch and a half chamfers along the sides of those angled edges, beveled edges. So when you take into account that beveled edge, you're about an inch higher at the edge of the plane. There would be fairly simple mason techniques, concrete mason, to make a bevel. In other words, to feather that landing to meet the bevel and keep the plinth's shape. You just lose the relationship of the plinth to the landing. It just becomes kind of rolled into the landing. But that's one way of alleviating or removing the issue of the 4-inch gap at the landing to the relationship. I want to talk about handrails because that's going to take a long time to talk about that. Any more questions about concrete stuff?
So it's all cast in place concrete.
At this point, I guess I'm leaning towards this option just because it looks really goofy for it to be. It looks like maybe they ran out of money or something on the first version and they're saving money because it just kind of cuts off, you know, and drops down before it gets to the building. So I don't think anyone's going to get why it does that. It doesn't just continue straight across like this version.
You're talking about C1.
That was C2.
C2. C1, halfway, it drops down.
Like the uniform length of the
I think the uniform
plants.
Length. I mean, it's uniform now, correct? It doesn't drop down
in
the current version. So I think that makes a whole new design feature if you're dropping it down.
Yeah.
So I prefer this version, not that one.
This one?
No.
This is C1.
No. Okay, C2.
That's C2, right?
That's C2.
C1 has that jump right
here. Yeah, that, it's, yeah. Yeah, that's
C2
really
is the flat.
Yeah.
Yeah, to get you ready to go on to handrails. I think you handled the problems, the issues very sensitively, and gave consideration to some hard points that were difficult to resolve. I like C2 form. I'm not necessarily a fan of the trenches, and I kind of am going where Alex was from the street. Driving by, walking by, until you get right on top of those, it's not going to really mean anything. And it's going to be a maintenance issue and potentially a liability issue. So I'd vote for no trenches.
No trenches.
Yeah. Hate to cover that up, but.
It will be a maintenance issue.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean.
And it'll never get enough rain against that wall. Well. Not never. It won't often get enough rain against that wall to wash those out.
I'm in agreement. And then, like you said, everything we kind of think of as an alternative just makes it a difference of kind of recreating history. Like, in my mind, if you're going to do bronze handrails, maybe the trench becomes some line, kind of a bronze channel itself or something, so it makes it more of a feature that doesn't also, again, look like a strange mistake, but then we're adding to something that could just be simply... Yes, that's it.
Ready for handrails.
So, now we're presented with 36-inch high handrail challenge. I think we've already begun to touch on that. The simplest way to frame those handrails is top bar, bottom bar, and vertical bars. Top, middle, bottom of the handrail. Trick in ADA requirements, however, the handrail has to be independent from the top bar. Let me just zoom in on this. This is technically the handrail set at 35 inches. We're not allowed to use a top rail as a handrail because the hand has to be able to grip and slide up. Without interference. There's a certain percentage of interference that's allowed, but it's quite limited. So we are tasked with having a handrail separate from any kind of supporting structure. Is that making sense? The handrail has to be set off an inch and a half from any supporting structure. So now, we know we have to have a vertical at the top, vertical at the bottom, connect them, and connect them for rigidity. So the question becomes, what do you infill with? Is it just another vertical, a minimal number of verticals just to hold the thing up, make it structurally sound? Or do you begin to introduce some kind of So we wanted to show you the idea of introducing some wire. There was some reasoning behind it. The scheme that we're showing, this is a bronze handrail system with a bronze, these are called trailage pieces that are inset inside the verticals and horizontals of the handrail. The trailage pieces, these are all cast bronze, these are all the legit real thing, as if you were recreating something. We're not recreating. But these are all very high quality monumental components, essentially. The trellage that we were recommending happens to be this piece right here, okay, from the manufacturer's catalog. My thinking on the trellage that was selected or proposed, this centerpiece. Rosette. There are actually four rosettes on the building currently. It's a garland of rosettes. These two and the symmetrically matching. So it echoes the feature of the building. The other portion is the floral piece at the top and also at the bottom. And there are a number of floral, these happen to be oak leaves, olive strength, that kind of thing. There are a number of floral ornaments, including the slabs here and pieces around the floor. So, the idea that any kind of ornamental feature to that railing would be consistent with the language of the building. Brought along all kinds of things for you to select from.
And what are the pictures of the railings that you're
showing?
Just
examples.
From other buildings that, just in that time frame? Or?
No, these are just examples. We wanted to illustrate simple to complex. Right? So, somewhat in the middle, an Art Deco style. Very, very simple. The finials.
And you see where the finial pieces that you see here, they have a little bit of detail. They can be straight on. I mean, they don't have to be around that much.
all the way up to very, very stylized, highly detailed stairs, one shoulder and bring the entry. That's out there in bronze.
So, do you have a concept in mind, Eric, about you've got the, what did you call it, the trellage?
The trellage.
Trellage. You've got the trellage, and then you've got the rail, and then you've got the framework of the, what's essentially kind of a guardrail that supports the handrail. And the way you've depicted it, it's like, it's almost like a flat bar kind of appearance, like, don't look at me, go away. Are you thinking that we'd come in and alter the verticals to some more decorative pieces, or what's your thought on that?
So they're all interchangeable. So the starting posts, the spindles, the trellage, all of those pieces are interchangeable, right? Mm-hmm. To be selected. So for instance, if through discussion, the desire was to be more elaborate, more ornamental, for the spindles, they can get as ornamental as this.
And the issue that we've got is that in 1909 there was no handrail, and then in whatever 1970 or something, whenever it was, the handrail was put in, there was a pipe rail put in.
Yes, pipe rail.
And now we're potentially proposing something that didn't exist in the original design, but we want it to harmonize with.
So I guess what I imagined for handrails was a lot simpler. And
yeah. Are you of the go make it go away camp or the let's celebrate it camp? I guess.
I probably more of a subtle. It can still. So okay. Full disclosure, most people should know by now that my family business is ornamental metal. So, and I've definitely had a lot of experience with bronze, brass, and everything in between, art deco rails, I mean, whatever, the gamut. But I think that, you know, if this building didn't have handrails, you put a bronze or a brass handrail on there and it's now shiny. I mean, bronze does dull, so you've got that, but it becomes something you see, versus we go back down to more of the wrought iron black, it starts to fade up against the building. So I guess I'm more in that camp of making it more wrought iron black. You definitely have a lot of examples of making it fancier. Like, I mean, gosh, I was just in New Orleans last month, and there's plenty of examples to draw from on wrought iron detailed handrails, but they're almost all painted black too. So, and from a maintenance standpoint, powder coated black rails are a lot easier than bronze or brass to take care of. And if we're going to talk maintenance on this, then let's not give them something that they have to put any sort of care to.
Well, and I got to say, it is a city building, but it doesn't get a lot of maintenance. So, simpler will be better.
I mean, bronze will last a long time, about obviously, and it will have its own character as it ages. But it's triple the expense for a handrail too than if we go the other route.
I'm recalling there's like, I think it's a brass handrail, more of an Art Deco design on the front of the courthouse that gets a lot of hands on it, so it has a. You know, it's
different patina
to it, but it's this. I suppose this would get hands on, but you know, it's going to become like the star of the show in some ways if we go down the path of the trellage and the spindles. And
well, you know, to me, just they didn't have a handrail. Let's not make this handrail such a showcase.
Yeah. So then, where do you go? Do you go to a pipe rail, do you go to a similar kind of a thing with powder coated flat bar? Not that that's your job to design it.
No, definitely don't need to design it, but you, like I said, you could do something very similar in design and make it, all of these elements are available in iron, in steel, so cast pieces are available. So you could definitely, we don't have to, I think we're more looking at tonight whether or not we like the idea of bronze versus something else, right?
I think so.
It will be to require bronze and level
of ornamentation, yeah.
Yeah. I'd like to ask kind of a, what I think might be a rhetorical question. The existing pipe rail that's in there, does anybody like it? So, again, I'd really be rhetorical. If we keep it simple, it will look like that in 10 years. No matter what we make it out of, that's baffling. The people who are near the next time fixing the stairs in 100 years are going to be like, what the heck? That's bad. Look at the beauty of this building. And they stuck this whatever. Here, at least, there's just one. Now we're going to have two.
I'm wondering if, Robert, do you have any opinion on, say, the how we are complying with the Secretary of State guidelines if we get on the horse and ride down this path of ornamentation and, you know, trellages and so forth. Any thoughts on that?
I think as long as you're not doing anything that would confuse somebody who's looking at the building and thinking that
one
that
period
was,
versus
right,
another period. Yeah.
That was original to the structure, yeah, which is the intent of those standards.
And incorporating those sort of sympathetic elements of the
right,
rosettes and the leaves and leaves and that kind of thing,
right,
I suppose could one could argue would lead somebody to start thinking, oh, is this an original element? But
if it's too much of a, you know, period piece, you know, too historical looking, then I think maybe you'd be confused.
I feel like I hear Sean's saying the phrase false historicity or something.
Yes, <yeah. laughs> Oh, we missed Sean.
But then, again, you'd have to kind of go back down the path and say, okay, were there any handrails in these Carnegie libraries? And it sounds like there really never were, right?
Yes.
There aren't. There's not much evidence out there that they had those, right? So anybody who's knowledgeable about the subject wouldn't be confused by that. They would recognize that as a later addition.
Right.
Are there examples from recently renovated Carnegie libraries that have already gone through this process?
Recently renovated, but when we did the cosmic Google search,
yeah,
almost every single one, with one exception, in Nebraska, had the solution that we have.
The central pipe rail.
I would say that none of them that we found that were contemporary photographs, none of them had no handrail. They all had some kind of rail to put back in. So no one has left. In modern time, from what we could tell, from what we saw, no one has left the stairs unencumbered by handrails.
So prior to processing and the discussion and so forth, I have to say my initial reaction to that as a an appropriate design element with the trellages and so forth was I liked it. You know, our job isn't necessarily how do we feel about it, it's does it comply with the requirements or not.
I just felt like it was too fancy.
Too fancy.
That was my first reaction. I just thought it kind of shines on the side of the building and it feels too fancy.
And the handrail in your rendering, that's your preferred or your recommended handrail selection?
The handrail we recommended, And you're talking about the actual brick surface?
Yeah, the one you have in that photograph or image there.
I'm thinking about finish and color and style.
Yeah. Because if we were to do a straight up and down vote on option one, option two would be inclusive of that, right?
I don't think so. I think we could condition our opinion on any aspect.
Right. But if we were to vote on option one,
we don't have a picture of what it looks like, but flat elliptical with so shaped like this with a fitting underneath for attaching the vertical pieces. So it's not round, it's not square, it's flat. The ADA standards are pretty specific about what you can and cannot have for handrails, so we do know this one's ADA. You're limited. I'll try this one.
And the two light posts that you see in the image here, those are made of steel?
Light posts are just so in the original building.
Or something. I'm just wondering.
We're just moving them forward.
But they're metal, they're cast.
Yeah, they're cast. There are small leaves at the bottom and a small detail leaf at the top that appears to be painted a golden color or a bright bronze color. And that was where we were beginning to say, okay, we've got a little bit of this shine to the building. The bronze handrail will be the thing that stays bright, but the verticals will dull over time.
If you're concerned, it's the color.
What's the rationale for going with bronze versus cast iron or black, I guess?
Purely emotional. It's a beautiful building and deserves bronze.
Fair enough.
Same as would be horrible.
Yes, agreed.
Brass would be ridiculous.
Yes.
And then I think the wrought iron or the black paint is just another black one.
Question isn't even just materials, but it's level of fanciness. I mean, they could even add more of these panels throughout that railing. You know, the question too is not to have any and just to have pickets. It doesn't matter the metal, that design can transfer.
Sure.
How much harder is this, would this be to take care of than cast iron?
Well, like I said, there's different treatments that people will do to bronze to make it less maintenance. Sometimes they will actually put a clear coat on it to retain that bronze color longer. But that can chip off sometimes or wear out. Sometimes you have someone who will just, it's kind of a like a wax that you'll put on it. Or you could just leave it and let it do its thing with the patinas, like, yeah, so. Yeah, so it does. You know, versus again going all the way back to just a black railing. I mean, just look around at how many black powder coated railings you have. Sometimes they get chipped, and that's about it. Really. So, and they need
the black railing that we have here that paints feet up. There's plenty of paint on it, there's a fire.
Yeah.
But wrought iron and rods should not necessarily require any maintenance.
Right. Depends on what look you want. If you want it to blacken.
Advocate for plain vertical pieces or slightly decorative,
you know, like that one, this one.
I would probably advocate for that simpler design, yes. Just because I don't want it to be, I want this railing to
fade
into the background more.
There is that. If it's more understated, it kind of does allow the building to speak for itself.
As a person coming from an ornamental metal family, I love going crazy with this stuff, though. I mean, you know, tell me you want a railing with all of these features, and I'm like, yes, this is fun, because you get way too many boring square rails, but my role here is not that, so just saying, you know, just for the record, I had to get that out of my system, like, yeah, this would be fun to build, but that's not what we're talking about.
So. Yeah.
Appropriate for the public to ask a question?
Please wait for public
comment. Yes. We haven't had public testimony yet, have we?
No. So we've had a lot of questions for Eric here. Are there any more?
Yeah, I don't have any more questions. I think
there'll be time for deliberation.
Yeah, we've had some thorough presentations.
So. Does he have any more presenting to do?
Eric, was there anything else that you wanted to share with us?
Well, actually, with the magic of Andrew here.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. The whole thing, almost. Side by side, it's good visualization.
You can leave. Don't worry about that one, because everybody gets it.
Mouth is.
But it's a challenge.
Yes.
Yeah, it's hard.
They do kind of define the railings in space a little better. Tips or going on to panel.
They look quite weak.
It does become boring looking without them.
That's funny. They're meant to be boring. That's my point.
Utilitarian.
So can the trellisy design be done in wrought iron?
Yeah.
Any more questions for Eric? Remember, we'll have time to deliberate.
Yeah.
So. All right, if there's no more questions for Eric, then we'll open it up to public comment. If anybody has an opinion they'd like to share.
A question. Will any work be done on the light standards as part of this project? Are they going to be refinished, repainted, rewired, anything?
Yeah, they won't be finished or repainted. They'll be moved forward approximately 5 feet, 1 feet, and they will be rewired.
Any other questions, comments? All right. If there's no more public questions or comments, we'll consider consider the public hearing closed, and we will allow the commission to deliberate. And I think that for the purpose of this hearing, because we have four members present, I will simply abstain from voting. That keeps us from getting into a kind of a hung situation, since I think that there's some decisions and possibly some conditions to be made on this. So I will turn it over then to the other three commissioners to make this vote.
I don't see why you couldn't vote unless there is, so then maybe hold on to that idea.
But I could just as easily abstain and let you make the decision, correct?
You could.
All right.
If you think so.
So let's just do it that way.
Okay.
Okay.
Speed up the deliberations.
Yeah.
I think we've got two main points. One is the stair design options, and the other
C1
is the C1 or C2 question, and the other is the handrail questions.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I feel like we're all pretty much in agreement with the C2 version of the stairs.
Can we make two separate motions?
Okay. Yeah. I would agree with that. I think C2 is the, I suppose the only issue then is C2 trench or no trench.
Yeah.
You know.
And I'd say no trench.
I mean, I think if I was envisioning it right, I was kind of open to that idea of the sort of beveled meeting of the plinth and landing as opposed to a trench.
Yeah. Didn't entirely get that, but. The plinth has a chamfer on it, and it's raised. Okay, you can't help yourself.
I usually have it.
And that would eliminate the entire trench.
The trench that would come down the three stairs to drain.
Oh, that is one. You're saying just because we're so flat up there that it's not draining. Is that the point, Eric? Or?
No, you had a
the
gap.
Trench, no, that the gap was for a different reason.
So this is a water table.
This is our plinth at the current plinth height.
In
water table, yeah, it's actually water tables beyond.
Okay.
So we have these inch and a half chamfers here and here. The top of the slab is, let's call it, the new landing.
Mm-hmm.
It's where it is, up about here. So we would have to roll it.
Gotcha.
Roll it, you know, pick a plane and roll it down. So I believe we would lose that characteristic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The characteristic that people see is the outside face, mm-hmm. where you have the chamfer and there's a reveal that runs the outside face. They don't see it.
Sorry, can you speak a little bit louder? Because we need to.
Yeah.
Record.
Here's the picture.
Yeah.
Microphone here.
Yeah. So okay, I wasn't sure how that landing surface related to the chamfer and so forth. So that was helpful.
Yeah. So let me just show.
Yeah, because I'm not sure I was envisioning it.
So if you were to cut through the concrete of the plinth and look at it. You're looking at it. This is the shape of the plinth. These are called chamfers here.
Okay, that beveled edge.
Yeah, beveled edge. And that's a definitely defining feature of this kind of concrete
sure.
work.
Yeah.
Okay. The landing, the top of the landing surface is somewhere up about here in relationship to the top of the plinth, the new concrete landing. So without the 4-inch gap, which allows for the plinth to be exposed.
Freestanding.
Right, right.
Feeling.
Without that, we would roll it in either to that plane, which would be a moss catcher, dirt catcher,
yeah.
or to that plane and lose that chamfer.
I see. Okay.
Make sense?
Yeah. So there's no way to avoid the landing beam.
C2. Right, the landing height is set.
Yep.
The water table height, therefore plinth height, is set. They just miss.
So it sounds like we're probably more inclined for this rolling it than to have a full-on or are we?
Well,
here
now that he's shown that to me, and you would lose that defining bevel on the inside of the plinth. See, I was sort of imagining it rolling to the base of that, but I didn't realize it was such a. I thought it was more subtle than that.
But it does go back to, I believe, as you point out, just an observation that was made earlier, bevel pilaster base. You don't really see that until you're up to it.
Yeah.
The defining features of the stair from where you are on the street, which is really where you perceive the most, is this emboss here, and then this continuous reveal here.
Yeah.
That stays. So it's only when you get to the top landing that you get the kind of strange thing. And ironically, remember that photograph I showed you how the top of the plane just barely didn't quite line up with the water table? I'm talking about just something about like that. I mean, it's really
okay.
I only discovered it after doing so much thorough photography, right? But when you go up there, you'd never notice it. It looks like it lines up.
Okay.
I think we're talking about something somewhat similar.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't think that's a issue. It sounds like, you know, unless you take that slope back so far that you're screwing up your cross slope on the landing and stuff, but you can it could all happen in that narrow band between your curb and the and the edge, the plinth, the face of the plinth.
If the decision is to not express the pilaster bits, just protect it before the concrete up, then I strongly recommend you don't do the trench next to the plant.
Yeah.
Right.
That trench is really about the pilaster that resolves the rest of the system. So we're going
to die. Personally, I'm not so worried about the trench itself because I don't see it as any kind of danger. No one's going to trip into it like we kind of originally thought maybe. And they're probably not even going to notice it. It's only 4 inches, like you said, unless you're right on top of it. So on this one, I'm almost to the point of, like, you guys have a strong feeling about it. Or is this...
I mean, there would still be the gap between the building facade and to keep that pilaster exposed.
Well, that would be the 4-inch gap.
That's that would be the 4-inch. But then there's the side channel.
Right.
That we're talking about minimizing with the roll.
Right. And the way I am conceiving of that is the reason for the trench is to express that original architecture intent, right? And the original architecture intent had that piece exposed. So exposed that plug for 1 inch. So it's kind of like the pilaster remains.
What's your preference?
Well, this is where I was shown right here, because we talked about the intellectual historicism of what we talked about. My opinion is there are very, very few buildings like this in Washington State, let alone in Vancouver. I think very often we're a little bit cavalier, especially when it comes to maintenance and things like that, and I appreciate that. It's our tax dollars. I do. But I think sometimes we're a little cavalier. And we cover things up. And you know what? They never get uncovered. Just drive by the pawn shops. You know, they covered up those facades how many years ago? They're never going to get uncovered. Something radical has to change, right? And so the idea of covering up the bottom of those pilasters, I don't know of any other building in Vancouver that has terracotta bases to the pilasters. The Higgins has concrete. Me covering them up, we're just doing kind of what everybody always does. It's a unique opportunity. That said, the perception of the base of the pilasters from the street really is probably the most important perception as you're beginning to walk up the steps. I don't think many people notice things like that. So that's where it becomes that kind of intellectual, historical approach.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it's the spirit of the historical preservation to not do any intervention that damages the older structure to be able to make the roof. I think at minimum we would put some kind of board, some kind of cast in place edge that the concrete could go up to and not actually go up physically to tear concrete. And then that edge can be removed. They make plastic ones that you can remove and put sealant in, so you'd actually have a soft interface. So that way the terracotta is never damaged, but we don't have a 4-inch gap with one of these issues. Potentially the same issues.
And we dismissed the idea of a trench cover pretty quickly, but I would think it could fairly easily be detailed to be supported on the concrete side without impacting the terracotta. And it would keep the leaves and the dead cats and the newspapers and the squirrels. And
yeah, I agree. But if you look at the dimensions that we're talking about around those pylons, very small. You get all those cuts that would have to be set so well.
You know, actually, all of these could be something added later. If it becomes something unsightly, they could come back and add some kind of covers. Or they could even decide to cover, to fill it in, you know, with something.
Yeah.
So the point being that if we leave it with, we leave that 4-inch gap now, we have the option later versus maybe possibly regretting it, and you can't really fix it after that. I mean, you can't just.
This is kind of a one by the other.
Yeah.
So if we were casting the gap, and then over time it was like, okay, this is a nuisance. The likelihood of the city funding something, bronze or cast iron, or something that looks like it works, fairly minimal. It would probably be an off-the-shelf stainless steel trench drain.
Or probably just fill it up with concrete.
Maybe be the best option at that point.
I think maintenance would show up and do that and probably not ask about it. They made a mistake when they built this thing, you know? I gotta fix it.
Yeah. Well,
will the curb fit right into that?
Just saying, you definitely can. Yeah, you can modify it later if it's a problem, if it really is a problem.
Yeah, and that's one option. Go with that, and then if it becomes a maintenance issue, then it probably won't be an elegant solution when it gets addressed, but.
Which kind of goes back to my original comment that if we're going bronze, then I'd say put some bronze into this 4-inch crack and make it look more like it's all meant to be some kind of architectural feature.
Yeah.
But
that's kind of, my head was going there, if we were going to keep the, if we're going to put a cover on it, make it a bronze trench drain cover.
Easier to clean than concrete. Right.
The bomb.
Yeah. I mean, as far as acting like a gutter to sluice whatever's collecting in there and out.
Gutter.
Yeah. Oh, you mean line it with bronze?
That's what I was thinking. Make it like a gutter.
Good. That would solve the how do you support both edges.
Oh, that would be covering up the terracotta.
Right.
And it would only be someone like an architect doing some forensics on a building without covering it off. That's the original proportion.
Yeah.
If we line the trench with a metal pan, it's going to cover the terracotta too.
It would just be like a bronze channel. I'm just, like I'm saying, it would make it look like it was meant to be something like that, if that's where we were going. And I wasn't in the bronze camp, but if, you know, I'm just saying.
Yeah, I know.
It's an idea out there.
Free thinking, yeah.
kind of midway between.
Okay.
Lots to think about. I think we have an easy first decision, though. We could kind of split it out. Our first decision seems to be that we like C2. Mm-hmm. So now we have two more decisions. It said trench or no trench.
Hmm. Yeah.
Railing.
Can I make a motion on the first? I move that we approve the C2 option with not addressing the channels at this time, just the C2 option in terms of
the concrete
work.
Second.
Yeah.
So we have a motion to approve option C2 on the design without addressing the concrete for the channel. And it's been seconded. All in favor of that?
Aye.
Okay. So we have a decision to make as far as the rating goes.
I'm kind of leaning toward in thinking about the Secretary of State standards and the fact that even if we add the trilages, is I getting it right again? Trilage. Even if we add those trilages, and you know, have the justified rosettes and the oak leaves, the Florida loom that it was depicted, I don't think we are suggesting that it's from a different time than it is from. So I don't think that there's that action would rise to that level. So aesthetically it works. So I'm kind of moving to where I could be comfortable with those panels. Then it's just, what about the metal? Is it the brass? Or
bronze? Yeah. Given that the light standards are cast iron black, I guess I'm leaning more towards it can include the fancier elements of the panels, but it could all be done in cast iron black to match that the metal that's already on the building. I lose my voice.
Would you buy metal and so you'd say it had the trellage in a bright metal and the
No, it would just all be cast iron black.
Okay.
Could be, like I said, they don't have to redesign. This can all be done in cast iron black and powder coated black. But it, to me, it would match better with the metal on the building. You could even add more panels if you wanted to in that sense. Like I said, more of that craftsman-ish that you see in like places down south. But like, that's where I would be leaning.
My thoughts are pretty close to Sarah's, I think, on this. The bright metal is a lot, you know, and it's a departure from the look of the building. I like it.
Do you
want to make a motion on that? Yeah, I mean, I'm not the architect in the room. It does seem like the
not highlighting the handrails, you know, and drawing undue attention to them does make sense, but at the same time, it's, like you said, I mean, it's an opportunity to sort of make something nice out of it, you know, so, you know, maybe sort of Sarah's idea splits the difference where you have the ornamentation, but it's a understated color, black. Maybe that works. Does the 3D do color?
Yeah,
and brick.
One of the things that we regret is the limitations of the three-dimensional rendering program. The bronze that you stock color comes out looking quite yellow, medium. So we try to work, and as you know, bronze can go almost discolored.
Yeah,
it can.
So unfortunately, we can't just accurately render it.
Yeah.
And actually, that's a good point.
That is a good point.
You can actually have it blackened before you go out there. Mm-hmm. But now it comes down to feel.
That would be a much more elegant look, much more in keeping with the details on the building if it were dark, less flash.
Yeah, I mean, just even from this distance, you know, that yellow
doesn't fit.
So, yeah.
Remember, this is deliberation, not negotiation. Majority will win. So if you feel like you've swayed it,
well, I think
another person.
Yeah. Well.
Sarah, if you blacken the bronze, and you blacken the bronze candle, that blackening would wear off. So wouldn't you get that situation where the hand rub, as it's rubbed over time,
you get highlights.
Like St. Peter's foot?
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's
right.
All shiny where it's rubbed.
We would get a patina where it's touched, yeah. But, interesting. Actually, I feel like my dad should be in the room right now, Mr. Expert. You know, how long does that last, you know? Phone a friend.
I assume there's a pretty significant cost difference between cast iron and bronze.
Right. So I think I'm willing to make a motion on this because there is a big cost difference, and I don't think that we, as a commission, would be weighing in on the cost difference. We're more weighing in on the look. So, and definitely, you can definitely talk to my dad, who's been doing this for 40 years, and could give you some options on how to make
it. Sort of a pretty defined budget for this and the HVAC system.
Okay.
And
our cost estimate is $15,000.
And not to, you know, I've been holding back because I don't want to delve into the many details I could go into with this handrail from what I know from experience. But, yeah, bronze is going to at least be triple the cost of an iron railing if cost was a matter of things to consider.
And wear unevenly, right?
You know, I think some people do think that's the elegant part of bronze. I think that's what has been discussed.
It's character.
It gives it character because your hands and everything may change that color, so, and that feel. So if we go cast iron, black, powder coated, any of those things, it's always going to be black, you know. So, but it's also, we can, like I said, we can also go fancier. It doesn't have to be the more boring idea that I was suggesting, more plain. You could add those panels. I guess if a good visual would be, you know, think of some of those iconic visions from like New Orleans, and their railings along their balconies have quite a lot of flourish to them, and they're all painted. They're not brass or bronze or anything, or stainless steel or anything shiny, but so you can definitely get that flourish from steel. So I would say that I'd be leaning towards saying whatever they do, I think we're probably all in agreement that we like the design of it, and then the finish would be where we're discussing whether or not we feel comfortable with it being something right off the bat being dark or black, right, versus something else, right? Is that where we're kind of headed?
Seems like it, eh?
Yeah.
Would it to make the recommendation that you approve the more ornate design.
That's what I'm thinking.
And
that
either
the
of the materials is acceptable, and we make the decision based on where the budget lands.
I think that sounds good.
Right. So I'd make a motion on the handrails that the ornamentation as proposed is acceptable, and that that we prefer either cast iron black railings or darkened bronze railings.
Yeah.
Based on
that, and allow the city to make the decision.
I think right. I think that's implied when you say or.
I second.
I think that gets us to the darker railing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I'm happy with that.
Okay, so we have a motion to approve the hand railing with the panels, with the panel ornamentation, with an option on materials based on budget concerns. Those materials would either be wrought iron or bronze.
Okay. Darkened bronze.
Second.
Oh, I think it's already
I
seconded.
Second.
Oh, did you? Okay. Motion's been seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. It's unanimous.
What's that?
The trench.
Oh, I was like, we're done.
The trench or not the trench? The troubling trench.
All right. I make a motion that
I thought we
include the trench. Someone has a second, and then we can debate.
I'm not going
to
second.
So we have a motion to approve the trench. Too. I hear a second.
It doesn't mean we voted on it. Someone just has a second, so we can discuss it.
Yeah.
Okay, I second it.
Okay.
Can we look at it again?
There's the side.
Pilasters project.
And would that be 4 inches wide as well? That'd be the same width. We're talking.
Yeah, 4 inches.
4 inches. That's it.
4 inches wide.
Wide. Right.
That's like 11 inches or something.
13.
Mm. Ouch.
That's deeper than I was envisioning.
I don't know. My foot is probably about 3.5 inches.
You can vote. We can fail.
Mm-hmm.
So we can vote, and it can fail, and we can try another motion.
Voting on approval of the trench?
Right. That's
just, what just need a majority,
as
though, right?
In option two. All right. All in favor?
And a yes? Okay. So it fails. All right.
Fails.
So what's the motion then?
So the only way to...
Motion fail?
Yeah.
More discussion.
So the only way to get rid of the trench would be to cover up the terracotta.
What if you did something that was a clear cover?
Not about glass. Even cast glass will age over time. And I was thinking about specifically just glass bridge in Venice, which is about 15 years old now. Flawless when it started in history with the...
It's like a yellow.
Yeah, because the weather.
It looks like it's a patina.
It gets a patina, yeah. And so I think, again, we defeat the ability to see it.
Yeah.
Just concerned that it's going to be full of guck.
Yeah. It, that deep.
Put a gasket in there. Rubber gasket.
know, to, as Eric pointed out, if someone did want to restart the future for whatever reason, just put some kind of bond-breaking material against it, cast the concrete against it, and it remains unharmed and intact. Just when I weigh the positives versus the negatives and what you see of it, how you perceive it, how you would likely perceive it as you approach the building, I'm not seeing a strong argument there, because you wouldn't see it from the street, you wouldn't see it from the sidewalk.
Yeah. And if it is filled with dirt,
it being what, the pilaster or the channel?
The base of the pilaster.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then when you, if you did happen to look down, because I know when I'm approaching a door, I'm looking, what's my next step? I'm going to grab the door handle, I'm going to go in, what's in front of me?
Yeah, is any of the pilaster exposed above the...
Yeah.
It's like 4 inches or something, 6 inches, 5.5. Is the P detailing at the top of the pilaster exposed?
So, and if we went without the channel option and the landing went straight up to the facade, something could be put as a barrier between the concrete and the bottom portion of the pilaster to, in theory, preserve it.
Just, yeah, narrow fiber board or whatever.
Standard construction.
Yeah.
You could put a 4-inch board in there. We could plug it with something like that, where you could just pull it later too.
But then you'd be right back at the same.
Well, but it's not permanent. It's not like concrete. No one's gonna chip away at the concrete later. But you could pull some board out of there.
Yeah.
Like that.
I guess we're allowing you to.
What's that?
Am I allowed to talk to you in relation to the
channel? Generally not.
I think you're talking about like a closure, basically, that would cap that, leave the gap. Because, you know, I have a concern about the dirt. I do still kind of have a concern about
safety.
I'm in a conversation. I'm standing on the... next to the door, talking with someone, and step back out of the way, and in goes my, you know, heel into the 4-inch trench, and all of a sudden, you know, I'm calling up the city and saying,
right, we're,
you know,
replacing this one hazard with another one, essentially.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think you don't want a whole bunch of different materials and mm-hmm. elements, you know, I mean,
you start to wonder why.
Yeah, you start having a sort of Frankenstein-looking thing if you're plugging a hole that maybe didn't need to be there in the first place.
Yeah.
I mean, it almost feels like a portion of that pilaster is exposed anyway. It might just make the most sense to...
Do you have the image of the... I think we saw an image of the pilaster... Is it?
Actually,
oh, there
right.
We go. Yeah. So that's. Yeah, that's. There's that.
Yeah, so it's going to go up about.
So about 5.5 inches from the top of the bullnose.
Well, your lower hand is where.
To the.
Rock. Your lower hand, see where it goes straight across from the landing? That's
so
how much is going to be hit, because it's going to be even with the landing.
Yeah.
Oh, with this water table.
Be higher than that next one.
Oh, it's going to
so
be that top.
It'll be
one.
Just right below that groove of the bullnose.
Maybe you can kind of point out where you think it's going to.
You'll still see it.
You said 5.5 inches.
You'll still see it. Almost.
Because you can see the door. He's leading goes across the higher
though. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So
translates around.
Few inches, but you still see some of it.
And I totally understand the concern about the proportion being way off with that. Now you have this stubby little.
This is the water table.
Yeah.
So you know that roll.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's.
Right. Okay. So you have you have to roll it and slope it so that it drains.
I'm glad you brought up the potential safety issue in your deliberations, because that's the thing that I think about the legal test. I mean, would a reasonable and prudent person believe that this is a potential hazard? So if somebody does injure themselves on this, well, now here we are, we have records from a public hearing where we're discussing a potential safety issue. So if you were prosecuting that, you would go back and you would look at these records, this audio testimony. So
I think you made a good point about the fact that it's not visible.
I guarantee you, if someone gets hurt on that, cops will come and pour concrete in it.
I brought it up just to kill it, really.
And it probably won't be as elegant as the concrete around it.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like it's a cutoff element.
Because the key details are still intact.
The key details are still there, and I feel like there's enough exposed beneath that bullnose to still give it some legitimacy as a.
And it, as Eric has explained, there will still be a difference between where the water table hits. So there's the rolling of the. So it'll be a little awkward and fussy.
Oh, because the water table is not the same height as the landing.
Is the water table higher?
A little lower.
Yeah, so this is going to come down and then it's going to roll a little bit until it gets there.
Okay. But it can roll on the back side of that.
Let the cover and increasing incrementally exposed water table so that it fits. Yeah.
I guess I'm of the opinion to nix the gap and take the landing to the pilaster, to the facade edge, put some sort of barrier between
the
to preserve it.
Groundbreaking kind of material to maintain the integrity of the terracotta.
Is that a question? That was an opinion. I can formulate it as a motion.
It kind of sounded like a motion.
I move that we approve the idea of getting rid of the channel and taking the landing to the edge of the pilaster.
Second.
A motion to remove the channel, take the landing to the pilaster. The motion has been seconded. All in favor?
Do we have any discussion?
Any discussion? Any further discussion?
Any more? I don't.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right.
Motion approved.
Sorry, Eric. You win a few, you lose a few.
Good. I think good. Personal. Good choices.
Great.
Thank you. Very much.
Thank you. Very nice work, Eric. Very nice presentation. Very thorough.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
It's not an easy project.
No.
Yeah.
It's the most difficult.
Small.
600
square feet. Set of stairs.
Yeah. So good things come in small packages. Sorry.
All right. So moving on. We have new business. Now, we had originally scheduled HPC chair elections for this evening. We have a situation where Sean Denniston, who expressed some interest for one of those positions, either chair or vice chair, is not present. We also have a situation where next month's meeting kind of coincides with the absence of Commissioner Dahl, Commissioner Fox. So we need to have some discussion around, okay, do we move the next meeting? And it sounds like, Mark, that's a possibility for us.
I think so. Commissioners, I'm going to check with Keith Jones at our office to see if that works on our side. But would August 8th work for the commission to meet a second Wednesday in August?
Right, and this would be the meeting to address the design for the academy.
Right.
And that's only a request for feedback, correct? That's not going to be a public hearing?
Right, that's not a public hearing. That's just input from the HPC.
Okay, and Commissioners Gall and Fox, do you be present at that meeting?
I believe so. I'm not 100% sure.
He's flying back that day.
I'm flying back that day.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll be, as far as I know.
The other option would be that we have a special hearing, which could be a very short meeting just to do the officer elections. Otherwise, we're in a position where we punt all the way till September. Yeah, I don't know.
I'm fine having a special meeting to do the elections if we can all make it. That would be the key. Schedules.
So maybe that's plan B if we can't make it work for the 8th.
So for the 8th, would it be elections and the academy?
Right, it would be a full agenda.
It would be a full agenda.
Yeah.
I think that's a preference. And we might even have, well, we have our new commissioner on board.
Oh, possibly, right. Yeah.
Maybe not by August.
And what if they decided about the other vacancy?
The council is conducting interviews.
Oh, they are.
And then it has to go on the consent agenda. So I don't know if that can happen in the next 3 weeks.
Who are they interviewing? Oh, they haven't mentioned it?
That's interesting. So is that both county and city council that are doing additional interviews?
Just the county.
Okay, that's what I thought. Okay, so I don't think this is anything that we need to vote on. We just need to discuss what we're going to do.
I can make that meeting. I get back at 12:30 in the afternoon.
Okay. Okay. So barring any delayed flights or anything.
So four of us are available on the 8th. Otherwise, only two, maybe three. Hopefully, Sean's available on the 8th then, too.
He hasn't said anything to me about not being available that day. I know that July is a problem for him this week and next week. So, all right, so let's try that then. Do the chair elections in August, and then we'll try to move the meeting for me.
So do both on August 8th? That you're going to try?
That's our first option, yeah. Okay, old business and updates. So, historic preservation code update. Sharon?
Sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
Two things at once here.
Finish typing.
Okay. So the Planning Commission approved the preservation code updates. They made one minor change. The HPC had recommended to remove the phrase eligible to be listed. We had listed and eligible to be listed, and our prosecuting attorney disagrees with that. It just doesn't scale down the universe of what's everything. Eligible to be listed is every building, so we have to remove that phrase. It's just the only minor change that the Planning Commission.
Is it really? Because eligibility implies it's 50 years old, right?
The prosecuting attorney has over, writing approval on that, and so she interjected that it had to be changed.
So basically, it's coming back to us. We need to change that.
It's not coming back to you. It's moving forward. So the Planning Commission is recommending that change be made. So it's going to remove that phrase. Eligible to be listed.
So we're done.
You're done. I'm just telling you.
The train's left the station.
You're not surprised.
We'll see
when
what
you see
it ends up
come
like.
Out
we're
just
getting
updated. Just an update. Yeah. Nothing's coming back.
All right.
And it will go to council work session August 15th and a hearing on the 28th.
Okay.
What specifically is the language that's being changed?
So the yellow highlight that you had added in your hearing, that's going to be deleted.
So I guess, I deal with this stuff all the time. It listed or determined eligible for listing is usually the language that...
Mm.
But eligible for listing, that was the old language, right? Didn't we just revert
back? And we put
back
it back in, and it had gone back in and out. And then at the hearing, you put it back in, and you had to remove it.
Okay.
So even though it had been in there for a long time.
Yes.
Now it's contrary.
Because, yes, a lot of things, it happens a lot of times when you re-scrutinize something.
Because I think we just went with the old language to avoid the controversy, but we landed in the controversy anyway. Okay.
Okay.
Situation normal.
The 78th Street Heritage Farm Preservation and Maintenance Plan. There'll be two presentations. The first is August 8th here in this room, sixth floor training room, and the second is August 16th, 4 p.m. at the Heritage Farm. And you're encouraged to attend one of those if you can.
This is item three.
I'm on the old agenda. That was item three.
Okay.
And item two is that the Clark County Heritage Museum will be having walking tours of the farm on July 20th and 21st.
Who's doing the tours?
And what time?
I can get that to you. I don't have that.
Okay.
Or you can contact the Heritage Museum directly.
Who's giving the tours?
The museum, I'm not sure exactly.
Yeah,
not sure. And does require registration if you want to join. That's it.
Okay. There's no more old business, or is there anything anybody on the commission would like to add? Does it mean anything going on?
Well, I guess you guys all probably know about the article that was written in the Columbian. And I followed up with an email to the mayor of Vancouver just to sort of...
Did she respond?
Not yet, no.
How long ago did you email her?
Sunday night? Sunday?
Okay.
Just saying that, you may be aware of this big article and just want to kind of capitalize on the momentum and would like to see if I can get any guidance on how to present something for the Vancouver City Council. Just feeling that if the way Vancouver goes, if they were to incorporate some sort of policy change or something into the demolition permit process that the other municipalities would likely be more inclined to follow suit.
But we're not putting a demolition policy in the code, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's more, I'm just sort of trying to reach out and get, some sort of guidance on what would be a good path forward. I think we had one meeting as a subcommittee, I feel like we got a little bogged down on sort of like, oh, what should we start with first and this and that, and, meanwhile 6 months have gone by and, every week I go out to another place. It's like, oh, that building's gone, that house is gone. So I'm just sort of starting to feel like, well, maybe the best thing to do is just go talk to the top. So anyway, I'll just keep plugging along.
I'll ask her what, because she's not going to respond to it. She's going to give it to somebody.
Okay, yeah.
Staff to respond
yeah.
to. So.
And I want to make sure that I'm not overstepping and I'm not saying, oh, I'm, as a member of the commission, I'm doing this. It's
we do code revisions. We usually do like a big end of the year, all sorts of little code tweaks, but follow up with the planning department.
Well, I know as part of our subcommittee discussion, I was suggesting that we again go visit the cities, and actually the people that we need to talk to this time around are the building officials of the cities. Like the city of Camas is building official, you know, it's a very accessible kind of person. So, and some of the cities might be super easy actually, because the building official is usually in charge of that form. Mm-hmm. So we might have some easy wins where we explain mm-hmm. what the situation is, and they change their form, and it happens. But you know.
Yeah.
Is there a clear applicable example of how this is done in other jurisdictions?
Oh, I've pulled a lot of examples.
Yeah.
I mean, Bellingham is probably the most comprehensive. I mean, they do a SEPA for every structure over 50 years old. Now, I mean,
that probably wouldn't meet where.
No. And I think that would get pretty onerous. But you have, I mean, it runs the gamut. You know, and I'm thinking small here.
And,
you know, it's just documentation. It's not full on.
Yeah, the
consideration
is,
for preservation.
You've defined your goals as documentation.
Yes.
And so, like, I guess what I was asking was, like, with that goal in mind, are there examples of, you know, what is the repository for that kind of information? Do we have that already?
We do with the Washington Historic Property Inventory,
mm-hmm. yeah.
right? And that's the one that I've kind of defaulted to, because that's the platform I'm most familiar with in documenting. So, like, I'm doing a whole bunch of work for Evergreen School District now, where they're demolishing schools in Vancouver, City of Vancouver Public Schools, also going through, you know, these school bonds. They're demolishing schools. Well, if they're over 50 years old, we're recording them. But under the Vancouver strict ordinance of, you know, going out and doing an archaeological predetermination, we don't necessarily have to. I mean, DAF would require you to once they got the SEPA and everything.
So would this be a code change that's being proposed?
That's one of the questions I would want to talk to, you know, the council about, is, you know, is this more of a change on a form, or is this more of a code? I would love to see it in code, but I know that that's a more...
Well, let's start with having you talk to the appropriate staff at the city so that you get the advice on what the path would be.
Yep.
If, you know, the manager of the department is amenable to pursuing that, fine. And if not, then you can go talk to city council, at least know what the steps you're proposing
would
be.
Sure. Yeah. Okay.
So we'll set something up.
Okay.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, so like I said, Vancouver's definitely going to approach it differently than some of these other cities that we have. So,
yeah.
So I guess my hope would be that we kind of break this up into chunks again, so that we can accomplish more broadly all of the cities in Clark County too.
Well, you know, it's like when Clark County adopted the archaeological predetermination, it was not long after all the other municipalities followed suit. You know, Camas came up with their own, and that was basically piggybacks on everybody else. Pretty much piggybacks on the county's language and ordinance. So,
well, a lot of that came from state law. So it kind of makes you wonder, moving back from that point, is it a code change to make it happen, or is it from the top down, or are we going bottom up? You know, are we going directly to the cities to ask them each individually, or are we thinking it's more of a...
It might just be a change in the demolition permit.
And that would, I mean, yeah, and that's, you know, and that's the kind of questions that I don't even know who to ask of, and that's why I just figured, well, mayor would be a good start. She could just say, you know who you should talk to is this person.
Yeah.
And I'll delegate that person to kind of talk to you about this, so...
Is this something where we could send a letter out to from our commission to the other cities and say this is what we're trying to accomplish, and who should we talk to in each one of these cities? So we're not, I guess what I'm trying to do is not just focus on Vancouver, that we actually send it out and see, again, maybe we have some low-hanging fruit from other cities that immediately respond and immediately have.
Well, if the commission agrees, you could certainly send a letter to the mayor of every city and say,
development director.
Here's this article in the Columbian. Here's what we're proposing, and who would we talk to in your organization about implementing something?
Because it goes right along with us. We were just out at your city visiting you, you know, last fall, and you know, we're telling you what our mission is, and here's the next thing that we're working on as a commission. Could you help us? You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I like that idea.
There's nodding heads.
We're all nodding.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Go forward and conquer.
Do we have to make a motion?
No.
I don't think so.
You want to just direct staff to do that?
Yeah. But I mean, in general, I think.
Just saying that you're not alone in this. You've got a commission.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
I want to make sure I'm not overstepping as a commissioner. And, you know, I mean, I could be doing this as a private citizen.
It's like a perfect role for the commission.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
And Sean and Alex and I have met already, and we all do have, these are our questions too. We don't know without going out there. And I said at our subcommittee meeting too, I said that's why there's staff, that we have staff that can help us on this as well. So let's find out how we can all work on this together, because we're all just volunteers with full-time jobs too. So,
a letter, and you know, I'm sure Brad Richardson would probably be happy to also draft a letter, because you know, he's eye to eye on this.
So do you want to direct staff to write the letters? What do you want to?
I suggest that we ask staff to write a letter and reach out and go from there, see what the response is.
Well, the subcommittee is still active, right? Mm-hmm. So I can just as easily draft it or just get a draft and edit it.
The subcommittee.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
For comments.
And if you want any, you know, help language, a letter.
So it's Fox, Gall, and Dennison on the subcommittee?
Mm-hmm. Sean.
Great.
Sarah.
All right, we'll draft a letter for the subcommittee.
And then in terms of the actual outreach, then you know, we can leverage the resources of the entire commission.
Well, hopefully that letter will,
get them
to tell us what they think. And then,
you know, maybe the letter can suggest that we'd be happy to come speak to appropriate personnel or council or whomever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we can come back to the full commission and say, okay, this is what we found out. How much more work we think is involved with this and that sort of thing.
And whether it's going the route of form changes or code changes.
Yeah. I mean, those are really the two options, so.
Yeah.
Good stuff. CLG training. Sharon, you had sent out a note about that.
Oh, yeah.
We have a date.
There's probably new information on that.
$30 each.
You know who's going.
And then I had a question. I'm not sure if you understood, but since we're going to be presenting, it sounds like Alex and I, at least, and then maybe somebody else, depending if Kim wants to expand kind of the length and scope of that presentation. Do we get free lunch out of it, or free registration?
No, we don't. We don't pay for that. It's not. It's
public
in the budget.
Service?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
But we do need to pre-register, and they won't take a credit card, so we have to cut a check, and that takes a little while. So
it'd
be good to know who's planning on going.
Like September 30th?
September
25th.
In Tacoma Art Museum.
Tacoma again. Okay. I'd probably.
So you really need a head count in terms of who's in?
Yeah.
Okay. So maybe send out an email to everybody.
You can do that.
Deadline. I'm in.
You're in?
He's giving a presentation.
Oh, right. Yeah. Who else is in? Two of you are in. Okay.
I'd like to go. I don't see why I couldn't at this point.
Yeah.
I'll just send out another email and get a head count.
And we won't know about the two new council members.
Yeah. Three new council members.
Right. Three new
council members. Yeah, because we had two.
We only recommended two.
The great thing, and what I might recommend to Kim, is that, you know, we do the presentation, right? We kind of talk about the experience with the Jefferson Davis Monument and the controversy, because really the way the presentation is structured is that it's bigger than just the commission's experience, right? It's what we went through as a community. But then, as we can maybe have a broader discussion at the end, since it's, you know, basically community planning, personnel from throughout the state, and then if everybody's present, then that really kind of feeds into more of like a workshop type of discussion if she wants to take it that direction. And then the other thing that I had is, and I think I sent out a note just so everybody's aware, we've got the Hillborn presentation at the museum, and Michael Hauser has agreed to give kind of our main presentation on that.
When is that?
It's October. Well, isn't it first Thursday?
Yeah, so October 4th.
Yeah.
Yeah, I made some inquiries about that,
right,
but I really didn't get any response.
Okay.
So, and then I've been so busy that I should have followed up with my non-respondees, but I didn't.
That's okay. Are you interested in maybe talking about one of, you know, the drawings or one of the designs, and maybe giving an architect's breakdown of it?
What's the
kind
date?
Of what the significant features are?
September 4th?
October 4th.
Oh, October 4th. Yeah, I could do that.
Because I don't think we've done that in the past, where we kind of bring some of the technical knowledge from the commission into those lectures, but I think that would really add something to it.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's all I had. If there's no more old business and updates, I'll turn it over to public comment. Holly! Hi, Holly!
Hi! Just a reminder, if you haven't already filled out a survey for the State Historic Preservation Plan, please do so. You can find it at dahp.law.gov. And you can put any comments in there. You can say, we want 12 PLG workshops in Southwest Washington, whatever. But all responses are being tallied from around the state, and would be greatly appreciated to have as many perspectives as possible.
And it takes like 10 minutes.
Okay.
Could you send that link out again, just to refresh us?
Kim did just send me, and it spurred. I mean, she made it so easy. I just clicked.
Yeah.
So, am I allowed to send that to?
Send it to me, and I'll send it out.
Okay.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Thanks. That's great.
My days are just flying by. So lately, it's been like, unless it hits me in the face for sending a warning.
Yeah. Like a bug when you're going down the freeway.
Right.
Yeah.
Thanks, Holly. All right, if there's no more public comment, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn this evening.
So moved.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
All in favor of adjourning?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. Meeting adjourned.